The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells. Chapter 22. In the Emporium. So last January, with the beginning of a snowstorm in the air about me, and if it settled on me, it would betray me, weary, cold, painful, inexpressibly wretched, but still half convinced of my invisible quality, I began this new life to which I am committed. I had no refuge, no appliances, no human being in the world whom I could confide. To have told my secret would have given me away, made a mere show and rarity of me. Nevertheless, I was half-minded to accost some passer-by and throw myself upon his mercy. But I knew too clearly the terror and brutal cruelty my advances would evoke. I had no plans in the street. My sole subject was to get shelter from the snow, to get myself covered and warm, that I might hope to plan. But even to me, an invisible man, the rows of London houses stood latched, barred, and bolted impregnably. Only one thing I could see clearly before me, the cold exposure and misery of the snowstorm in the night. And then I had a brilliant idea. I turned down one of the roads leading from Grower Street to Tottenham Court Road, and found myself outside Omnis, the big establishment where everything is to be bought. You know the place. Meat, grocery, linen, furniture, clothing, oil paintings, even a huge meandering collection of shops rather than a shop. I thought I should find the doors open, but they were closed. As I stood in a wide entrance, a carriage stopped outside. A man in uniform, you know the kind of personage with omnium on his cap, flung open the door. I contrived to enter, walking down the shop. It was a department where they were selling ribbons and gloves and stockings and that kind of thing. Came to a more spacious region, devoted to picnic baskets and wicker furniture. I did not feel safe there, however. People were going to and fro, and I prowled restlessly until I came upon a huge section in an upper floor, containing multitudes of bedsteads, and over these I clambered, and found a resting place at last among a huge pile of folded flock mattresses. The place was already lit up and agreeably warm, and I decided to remain where I was, keeping a cautious eye on two or three other of the shopmen and customers who were meandering through the place until closing time came. Then I should be able, I thought, to rob the place for food and clothing, and disguised, prowl through it and examine its resources, perhaps sleep on some of the bedding. And that seemed an acceptable plan. My idea was to procure clothing to make myself a muffled, but yet acceptable figure, to get money and then recover my books and parcels where they awaited me. Take a lodging somewhere, and elaborate plans for a complete realization of the advantages of my invisibility gave me, as I still imagined, over my fellow men. Closing time arrived quickly enough. It could not have been more than an hour after I took up my position on the mattress before I noticed the blinds of the windows being drawn and the customers being marched forward. And the number of brisk young men began with remarkable alacrity to tidy up the goods that remained disturbed. I left my lair as the crowds diminished, and prowled cautiously out into the less desolate parts of the shop. I was really surprised to observe how rapidly the young men and women whipped away the goods displayed for sale during the day. All the boxes of goods, the hanging fabrics and festoons of lace, the boxes of sweets in the grocery section, the displays of this and that were being whipped down, folded up and slapped into tiny receptacles, and everything that could not be taken down and put away had sheets of some coarse stuff like sacking flung over them. Finally, all the chairs were turned up onto the counters, leaving the floor clear. Directly each of these young people had done, he or she made promptly for the door with such an expression of animation as I have rarely observed in a shop assistant before. Then came a lot of youngsters scattering sawdust and carrying pails and brooms. I had to dodge to get out of the way, and as it was, my ankle got stung with the sawdust. For some time, wandering through the swathed and darkened departments, I could hear the brooms at work. And at last, a good hour or more after the shop had been closed, came the noise of locking doors. Silence came upon the place, and I found myself wandering through the vast and intricate shops and galleries, showrooms of the place alone. It was very still. In one place I remember passing near one of the Tottenham Court Road entrances and listening to the tapping boot heels of passers-by. My first visit was to the place where I had seen the stockings and gloves for sale. It was the dark, and I had the devil of a hunt after matches, which I found at last in a drawer of a little cash desk. Then I had to get a candle. I had to tear down the wrappings and ransack a number of boxes and drawers, but at last I managed to turn out what I sought. The box label called them lamb's wool pants and lamb's wool vests, then socks, a thick comforter, and then I went to the clothing place and got trousers, a lounge jacket, an overcoat and a slouch hat, a clerical sort of hat with a brim turned down. I began to feel a human being again, and my next thought was food. Upstairs there was a refreshment department, and there I got cold meat. There was still coffee in the urn, and I lit the gas and warmed it up again. and altogether I did not do badly. Afterwards, prowling through the place in search of blankets, I had to put up at last with a heap of down quilts. I came upon a grocery section with lots of chocolate and candied fruits, more than was good for me indeed, and some white burgundy. I knew that was a toy department, and I had a brilliant idea. I found some artificial noses, dummy noses, you know, and I thought of dark spectacles. But Omnium's had no optical department. My nose had been a difficulty indeed, and I thought of paint, but the discovery set my mind running on wigs and masks and the like. I finally went to sleep in the heap of down quills, very warm and comfortable. My last thoughts before sleeping were most agreeable. I had sensed the change. I was in a state of physical serenity, and that was reflected in my mind. I thought I should be able to slip out unobserved in the morning with my clothes upon me, muffling my face with a white wrapper I had taken, purchased with the money I had taken, spectacles and so forth, and so to complete my disguise. I lapsed into disorderly dreams of all the fantastic things that had happened during the last few days. I saw the ugly little Jew of a landlord vociferating in his rooms. I saw his two sons marveling, and the wrinkled old woman's gnarled face as she asked for her cat. I experienced again the strange sensation of seeing the cloth disappear. And so I came round to the wildly hinside, sniffing old clergymen mumbling earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, at my father's open grave. "You also," said a voice. And suddenly I was being forced towards the grave. I struggled, shouted, appealed to the mourners, but they continued stonily following the service, the old clergyman too, never faltering, droning and sniffing through the ritual. I realized I was invisible and inaudible, that overwhelming forces had their grip on me. I struggled in vain. I was forced over the brink, the coffin rang hollow as I fell upon it, and the gravel came flying after me in spadefuls. Nobody heeded me. Nobody was aware of me. I made convulsive struggles and awoke. The pale London dawn had come. The place was full of a chilly grey light that filtered round the edges of the window blinds. I sat up. And for a time I could not think where this ample apartment, with its counters and piles of rolled stuff, its heaps of quilts and cushions and its iron pillows, might be. Then, as recollection came back to me, I heard voices and conversation. Then, far down the place, in the brighter side of some department, which had already raised its blinds, I saw two men approaching. I scrambled to my feet, looking about me for some way of escape. Even as I did, the sound of my movement made them aware of me. I suppose they saw merely a figure moving quietly and quickly away. "Who's that?" cried one. "Stop there!" shouted the other. I dashed around a corner and came full tilt. A faceless figure, mind you, on a lanky lad of 15. He yelled and I bowled him over, rushed past him, turned another corner, and by a happy inspiration threw myself behind a counter. In another moment feet went running past, and I heard voices shouting, "All hands to the doors!" asking what was up and giving one advice on how to catch me. Lying on the ground I felt scared out of my wits, but odd as it may seem, it did not occur to me at the moment to take off my clothes, as I should have done. I had made up my mind, I suppose, to get away in them, and that ruled me. And then down the vista of the counters came a bawling of, "Here he is!" I sprang to my feet, whipped a chair off the counter, and sent it whirling at the fool who had shouted. Turn, came into another round a corner, sent him spinning, and rushed up the stairs. He kept his footing, gave a view hello, and came up the staircase, halt after me. Up the staircase were piled a multitude of those bright-coloured pot things. What are they? Art pots, suggested Kemp. That's it, art pots. Well, I turned to the top step and swung around, plucked one out of a pile and smashed it on his silly head as he came at me. The whole pile of pots went headlong, and I heard shouting and footsteps running from all parts. I made a mad rush for the refreshment place, and there was a man in white like a man-cook who took up the chase. I made one last desperate turn and found myself among lamps and ironmongery. I went behind the counter of this and waited for my cook, and as he bolted in at the head of the chase, I doubled him up with a lamp. Down he went, and I crouched down behind the counter and began whipping off my clothes as fast as I could. Coat, jacket, trousers, shoes were all right, but a lamb's wool vest fits a man like a skin. I heard more men coming. My cook was lying quiet on the other side of the counter, stunned or scared, speechless. I had to make another dash for it, like a rabbit hunted out of a woodpile. "This way, policeman!" I heard someone shouting. I found myself in a bedstead storeroom again, and at the end of a wilderness of wardrobes I rushed among them, went flat, got rid of my vest after infinite wriggling, and stood a free man again, panting and scared. As the policeman and three of the shopmen came around the corner, they made a rush for the vests and pants, and collared the trousers. "He's dropping his plunder," said one of the young men. "He must be somewhere here." But they did not find me all the same. I stood watching them hunt for me for a time, and cursing my ill luck in losing the clothes. Then I went into the refreshment room, drank a little milk I found there, and sat down by the fire to consider my position. In a little while, two assistants came in and began to talk over the business very excitedly, like the fools they were. I heard a magnified account of my depredations and other speculations as to my whereabouts. Then I felt the scheming again. The insurmountable difficulty of the place, especially now that it was alarmed, was to get my plunder out of it. I went down into the warehouse and to see if there was any chance of packing and addressing a parcel, but I could not understand the system of checking. About 11 o'clock, the snow having thawed as it fell, and the day being a finer and a little warmer than the previous one, I decided that the emporium was hopeless and went out again, exasperated at my want of success, with only the vaguest plans of action in my mind. End of chapter 22. Read by David Russell. For Lit2Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.